This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth. Hello, good afternoon and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews. We have got in today's briefing a fantastic interview with the CEO of Life Healthcare. I say it's a fantastic interview because if you are prepared to do your homework, there is a good return on investment potential here. We'll also hear why the Chinese believe that Elon Musk can save TikTok. And there's some pretty good news for Prosus, amongst others. I'll give you the best performers of the South African shares since the beginning of last year and how the Magnificent Seven have done. So lots to look forward to in the next half hour. But without further ado, let's get into that interview with Peter Wharton Hood. You can watch the full interview on BizNews. It is the discussion on a purchase of $750 million of a subsidiary of Life Healthcare, the South African-based Life Healthcare, which is listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, which only 2 years ago was valued by investors at nil. Life Healthcare, as you'll hear later in the discussion with Peter, was trading at, on a basis that most people felt that whatever the stock was worth, the investment in the UK really didn't make any difference. This company was bought in 2018 for $5, and they've sold it for an effective $750 million. Let's pick up now with the CEO of Life Healthcare.
We always said as an SA-based hospital group, we weren't the natural owners of the asset. We didn't integrate it into our business. And I publicly said that we would manage it for value and at the right price it was for sale. You might well say, well, what's the right price and how did we get to the deal structure? I reminded some critics that 2.5 years ago, they said this asset was worth zero. It didn't make a string of beans difference in our market capitalization. A lot of critics said it'll never make money. And we were in the right place at the right time, that the industry started to evolve. Alzheimer's diagnostics started to take shape as a real industry when the therapy for Alzheimer's was approved by the FDA January of 2023. Now, all of a sudden, we became relevant. In that particular context, the winds blew in our favor, and the relevance of the diagnostic got traction. Our sales started to go up, and the potential for this business caught the attention of Lantis. Now you get to the question, why the Achterskot? If one just looks at it in pure investment banking terms, if we held the asset on our balance sheet and we sold doses of Neuraceq over the next 10 years, we'd end up getting value by making the sales happen. The question one asks oneself is, well, how much can we sell over the next 10 years? Very difficult question to answer. You know, given that the fortunes of this company have shifted in the last 2.5 years, well, how much are they going to shift in the next 10? So the Achterskot gives an indication of the fact that we are actually risk sharing to an extent with the purchaser. They put a chunky piece of money on the table for us up front. But if the product succeeds, it'll be a pleasure for them to pay us. So we are risk sharing it going forward. And that's typical of the industry that we're in, Alec, that it's not uncommon to have a significant amount up front and then trailer payments as the product succeeds. And that's how we structured the deal with it.
Some might have missed that it's $350 million up front. That's billions and billions of South African rands. And then the Achterskot is another $400 million potentially that you're going to earn from a business that you bought in 2018 for $5. Now, we've heard of great private equity investments or great investments. For instance, the fact that Naspers went and bought into Tencent all those years ago and did incredibly well. But this is a big one. This is an incredible return. How was it offered to you in the first place? And who took the decision to go ahead and finance these guys sitting in a small office in Berlin?
Yeah, the genesis goes all the way back to Bayer Pharmaceuticals. That was where this all started nearly 20 years ago. And in the context of got to 2018, you know, there was some sense of viability around Neuraceq and Alzheimer's diagnostics. But Bayer chose to exit. And in that exit, they sold it to Piramal Pharmaceuticals, an Indian-based company, who put substantial amounts of money into the development of Neuraceq. But they also got to a stage where, having spent circa somewhere between $300 and $400 million, also saw that this was non-viable, or felt it was non-viable. And at that particular juncture, they sought to offload it to a company that was prepared to nurture it going forward, not just sort of take a passing interest in it and then throw it away. They actually looked for a company that was going to nurture it. And in chatting to the chairman of Piramal, who I only met during the course of the sales process, he said that was the basis on which they'd chosen, you know, the Life Healthcare Group, that they thought we would take the product seriously. Having bought it for $5, we spent another $100 million during the course of the ensuing 6 years, salaries, research and development costs, licensing fees, sales and marketing, and we built it into a proper company, Alec, that it was one where we invested in IT, governance, finance, technology, sales platforms, incentive arrangements, hiring new skill sets and new people, building out the business in the United States, which basically started from a standing start. And so we did take it seriously. And I guess you might reflect on that and say, well, Life Healthcare took risk. Yes, we did. We took $100 million worth of risk in the context of our belief that that modality would eventually take shape. That was the punt that we took. And in that regard, we have proved to be correct. And with the benefit of hindsight, the returns are spectacular, but they weren't without risk.
Talking about shareholders and what they think of the business, I had a look at the share price, and I'm sure you're acutely aware that since January 2024, Life Healthcare's share price is still down by about 10%. Now, after the deal you did then, and the deal that you did now, and the special dividends, I would have thought that you guys would be flying. What's the reason for this? The main question, I suppose, would be, or the assumption would be, is the uncertainty around NHI weighing on the investor view of the company?
Absolutely, Alec. And that's the high price we're paying for dialogue that is rumor and fearmongering. That if you look at healthcare assets in other markets, they don't trade at 4.5 times EBITDA. They trade at multiples substantially higher than that. And in the context of what should be seen as a stable stock and a defensive one that's cash generative, yeah, and predictable, we're not enjoying that particular moment of favor with investors because of this, this uncertainty that sweeps around behind us. So the impassioned plea around conversations around the NHIs, they need to get to a point that's practical and responsible, so that's understandable. I'll give you a really good example, Alec. You stand around the Braai on a Saturday, and people talk about all the specialists leaving South Africa. You know, or that all the doctors are leaving South Africa. It's absolute nonsense. You know, in one of the 12-month periods recently reported to the board, the number of doctors that left Life Healthcare, either through death, retirement, moved to a competitor, and immigration, the number that immigrated was 7. 7 specialists immigrated, 3 of whom returned within the next 9 months. So this idea that specialist doctors are fleeing South Africa is not true. But yet those rumors persist. Things like that don't help confidence in the sector. But by the same token, when we see doctors newly qualified can't find training posts, that is a real problem for the country, because the world is short of doctors. We are short of doctors, and yet they're not being employed. So there are practical steps that need to be taken to be able to get confidence in the sector And then I think we can have a share price conversation again, Alex, so that, you know, you'll notice that Netcare and ourselves are both traded more or less the same multiples. So it's not company specific that drags the share price down. It's industry and sector specific conversations where the problem sits.
Hey, I like those kind of stories and those kind of insights, because if you can get past Mr. Market's obsession for national health insurance and the sky falling on our heads approach, then you have a look at the underlying companies whose values have been massively depressed as a result of it. And this one, Life Healthcare being one of them. This deal that they've done on Life Molecular Imaging, which is an offshore-based company that is in research and development, was generating about 7% of their revenues. This deal is going to give you more than half in cash of the market valuation, market capitalization of Life Healthcare. So you get the rest of the business for nothing. But as it was well explained, and you can go and watch that full interview with Peter Wharton Hood, it was well explained that because of the fear around national health insurance, in other words, Mr. Market getting his knickers in a knot, the share price has been heavily depressed. There's one for you to go and do a bit of homework on and maybe do some second level long-term thinking on. Well, there's a lot of second level thinking happening right now in Beijing, and they believe that Elon Musk is the man to save TikTok in America. Our partners at the Financial Times of London on the FT News briefing discussed it this morning to give some context.
TikTok's owners are in a race against the clock. A law will likely take effect on Sunday that requires TikTok's U.S. operations to be sold, or it'll be outlawed in the country. The Chinese government is considering whether Elon Musk could broker a sale. I'm joined now by the FT's Joe Miller to unpack all this. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
So to start off, what do we know about Musk's potential role here?
So there are reports coming out of China that officials high up in the Chinese government have discussed getting Elon Musk to invest into TikTok to buy a share, perhaps even a majority share in the company, although it's, you know, not confirmed by TikTok's owner or by Musk, whether this is true or not. The thinking behind this would be that this would calm all of the fears around TikTok being a Chinese company that led to this law seeking to ban it, and it would allow the app to continue to operate past the deadline.
And why is the Chinese government involved in this? Do we know?
It's a very good question, and it's quite curious to see these reports coming out, because TikTok's stance in US courts over the past year or so has been that they're independent. They're an independent company, have nothing to do with the Chinese government. Of course, it's true that all companies in China have some government involvement in them, so perhaps it points to the fact that they are more involved in the company than you might think, or perhaps that they see this whole brouhaha as an international kind of incident and a diplomatic one, and they would not like for there to be an enormous fissure with tens of millions of American teenagers hating China or getting involved in geopolitical disputes as a result, and they'd rather see it go away. But yes, we don't know precisely why the Chinese government is apparently involved.
So, Joe, why would China look to Musk to broker a deal here? I mean, to me, it sounds a little bit odd, just because Musk has this electric car company, Tesla, that is in competition with this big Chinese company, BYD. Musk is also close to President-elect Donald Trump, who is about to potentially slap tariffs of up to 60% on Chinese goods. Not a big China fan in general. What's going on here between China and Musk?
Well, I suppose one way of putting the question would be, who else would you go to if you were China? Elon Musk already owns a social media site, obviously, with X. He's very adept at raising money in the last minute. He's shown an interest in getting involved in, you know, such intractable conflicts. And you mentioned that he has a car company and he's a competitor with a lot of Chinese companies, which is true, but he has a lot warmer relations with Beijing than many people in the Trump world. His Shanghai factory for Tesla is by far the most important factory outside of the US, and he is seeking to grow his businesses there and has maintained warm, if not diplomatic, relations. And there's a lot of reporting out of China that Beijing sees Musk as one of the entry points into the Trump administration. So both from a sort of money perspective and a politics perspective, you could see why his name might be at the top of the list.
So where does all this leave us? Are we going to see a sale before Sunday when this ban is expected to go into effect? Or is TikTok going to go dark?
Well, the first thing to point out is that TikTok has a little bit of time, because even if the ban goes into effect, it's not really a complete immediate ban, because there won't be some government mandate that you delete it. All that means is that ByteDance can't update the app because the app stores won't be allowed to carry that update. And so there's a little bit of breathing room for a deal to be done. Nonetheless, this has just come out of the blue, and it would require, you know, quite a lot of very fast deal making. And not least, it would require meeting the standards of the law itself to make sure that TikTok would therefore no longer be subject to this legislation and allowed to operate.
All right. We will keep watching. Still a lot of unanswered questions here. Joe Miller is a Washington correspondent for the FT. Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you very much.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Well, some interesting insights there. Still in the international scene. Process will be, well, the executives there will be heartened as well, given the latest news that comes out of our partners at The Economist, where they say that tech companies in the global south, which is where Prosus primarily operates, are giving the Silicon Valley boys quite a hiding when the Americans come into their markets. Let's pick up now on this specially produced insert from our partners at The Economist.
America's internet champions once seemed destined to conquer the globe. With China off limits, many turned their attention to expanding in other developing markets. Some of them triumphed, including Google, a search giant, and Meta, a social media titan. But many did not, particularly in areas such as e-commerce, ride-hailing, and digital payments, where local knowledge or physical presence matters. Uber, which once promised to make transportation as reliable as running water everywhere for everyone, withdrew from Southeast Asia in 2018 after burning through over $700 million. PayPal, a payments firm, has struggled to make inroads in much of the developing world, even as digital payments have boomed. Nubank, a Brazilian digital lender, has more than 100 million customers in its home market, representing over half the adult population, and is expanding quickly across Latin America. Having started with credit cards, it now offers bank accounts, insurance, and investments. A strategy of targeting underserved customers has also worked well for Meesho, an online marketplace that has focused on India's smaller cities and is now its third largest e-commerce firm by sales. Social commerce, which blends shopping with entertainment, has taken off in Southeast Asia, where most online shopping is done on smartphones. 65% of e-commerce sales in Indonesia are made on mobile devices, compared with 39% in America. Junggan Lee of Momentum Works, a Singaporean research firm, notes that traditional e-commerce sites spend heavily to lure in users. Social selling keeps costs low as users come to be entertained and stay to shop. In 2021, TikTok, a short video app owned by ByteDance, a Chinese tech giant, launched TikTok Shop, which lets users buy products while scrolling. In 2023, the app sold $20 billion worth of products, with three-quarters of that coming from Southeast Asia. The model proved so successful in Indonesia that the government banned e-commerce sales on social media platforms to protect small merchants. TikTok acquired Tokopedia in response and now offers a similar service through it. In September, Shopee announced a partnership with YouTube, an American video site, to develop a rival offering. Not all these innovations will have a place in the West. It can be tough to find underserved populations in rich countries. Social commerce, though, is gaining momentum. America is now the largest market for TikTok Shop, overtaking Indonesia last year. Although America's Supreme Court is deciding whether to uphold a ban on the app in the country from January 19th, TikTok continues to expand elsewhere in the West. That should remind America's tech giants to keep an eye on innovations in the global South. Local ideas often take time to bubble up to headquarters in Silicon Valley, notes Kevin Alui, co-founder of Gojek, an Indonesian ride-hailing app who is now a venture capitalist. Those delays could cost America's champions dearly.
And that's our partners at The Economist. Process came under a lot of pressure recently, as did NASPERS, after there was fallout from the further legislative issues to do with Tencent. Poor old Tencent. If it isn't its own government who's hammering it, now it's the people in the United States who've put it onto a list of companies that are being sanctioned by the U.S. Defense Secretariat. It's called the Pentagon. Tencent is very confident that it'll get off that list. But in the meantime, the share price of Tencent was under pressure, and that has affected Prosus. But if you can see past that and onto a conversation like the one that we've just heard from The Economist, then you've got to know that that Prosus's investments through Tencent and also through its own initiatives are looking pretty sound, being in the global South. Well, part of the global South that is not really catching the attention of those who want to see a credible future for Africa is Mali. Mali has issued a warrant of arrest for Mark Bristow, a well-known South African executive who is running the biggest gold company in the world, Barrick Gold. Bristow is from Estcourt in KwaZulu-Natal. And here's the report on this issue with our partners at Bloomberg.
Barrick is suspending mining operations in Mali due to a dispute with the government over revenue distribution. The company warned it would be forced to take such action if the authorities continue to restrict exports and disrupt operations. Barrick stock has fallen more than 20% since October, when the disputes began to escalate. For more, Bloomberg's William Close is in Johannesburg. William, give us the background to this dispute between Barrick and Mali. Where did it stem from?
Yeah, morning. So Mali has a really significant gold mining industry, and gold is their most important export. And it's important to understand that Mali has been putting pressure on all of the gold mining companies in the country. It's not just Barrick in the crosshairs. And the finance and mines ministries in the country have been trying to get these companies to transfer large amounts of money to the state to settle financial claims against the companies, and also to accept higher tax rates and royalty rates in the future. So the other three main gold mining companies in Mali, active in Mali, have already come to settlements with the government. But Barrick, which is the world's second biggest gold producer and also the operator of the biggest mine in Mali, has not. It looked back in October like they might come to some kind of agreement, but those talks have soured. And the situation's got really bad now. They've put out an arrest warrant for the CEO, Mark Bristow. They've arrested and charged a couple of Barrick employees. They've restricted gold exports since, I think, November. And now they've started seizing gold kept at Barrick's mine in the country. So Barrick yesterday announced it had come to the decision to shut down, to suspend operations at them, at its mine in Mali, until it works out what to do about this this problem.
Yeah. I mean, you really describe quite a hairy situation, especially with an arrest warrant being out for the CEO. Barrick's stock is down 20%, which to me perhaps is a reflection of how important this mine is for Barrick. Just walk us through exactly how significant the mine is in terms of its contribution to Barrick's overall business.
Yeah, it's a really key asset, both for the Malian government and for Barrick Gold. For the Malian government, it's the biggest gold mine in their country. It contributes hundreds of millions of dollars to the state in taxes and royalties each year. And this is a cash-strapped government. That's total public expenditure each year is only a couple of billion dollars. So really significant for the government. Also really significant for Barrick. Barrick has a vast, sprawling portfolio of gold mines and copper mines around the world. And in recent times, Loulo-Gounkoto in Mali, which is what the mine is called, has been the second biggest contributor of both gold production and income after one of the company's flagship operations in Nevada in the US. So the stakes are really high for both parties, however long this suspension lasts and however it ends up being resolved.
And still with mining here in South Africa, the illegal miners who are trapped underground at the old Stilfontein mine is making global headlines. Again, our partners at Bloomberg have got the story.
Stembile, great to get you on. So many of us here in the country have been following this story closely. But for the global audience, talk to us about how this standoff actually began. Take us back a bit.
So this rescue operation that began on Monday is really the culmination of a standoff that's lasted about 4 months since October, where security forces embarked on this operation of Valamkoti, which basically means to close the hole. It's a clampdown on illegal mining, which cost the economy around 60 billion rand last year. That's $3 billion. And so the intention really was to seal off these shafts and to prohibit any kind of provision from going down to people that are underground. That's food, that's medicine. And then also they rely on people underground to rope them in and out. And so the intention was to get these people to force themselves to come out, given the lack of provision. And it worked for two of the three of the shafts on the mine, but one in particular is problematic because there is no infrastructure to come back up. And so this is where we've seen the majority of this tragedy unfold. The pit is 2.8 kilometers deep. And so without any assistance to bring you back up to the surface, people have been trapped there. Many have starved to death. Others have fallen to their deaths trying to come up the rope, which is a pulley system, a makeshift one, which some of the community members took it upon themselves to try and rescue these illegal gold miners.
And Stembile, you were out in the field yesterday, I believe, so you know this story very up close and personal. Where do things go from here? How does the government handle this? How do authorities handle this? And what does this mean for people who are trying to make a living at the end of the day?
It's a really tricky one. There's a lot of moving parts because the first element, as you mentioned, is that of poverty and unemployment, which has driven the majority of locals to go into this illegal gold mining trade. There's also massive criminal syndicates that are at play. We've seen children as young as 14 years old resurfacing from these mines, and so that suggests an element of human trafficking as well. So there's crime that the security forces are trying to deal with, but this has become a really delicate situation with the tragedy unfolding. The police minister, though, and the mines minister, they're adamant that they've done the right thing. This is an illegal activity. It's an attack on the economy is what they're calling it, and they're going to continue with efforts to clamp down on illegal mining.
That's the old Bufelsfontein mine, which was closed some years ago because it was no longer worth mining in a formal or traditional manner. And, of course, the illegal miners have moved in there. And so deep-level mine, tragic what is occurring at the moment. To close off with, I'm going to just bring you up to date on a few interesting market bits of information. The Magnificent Seven on Wall Street. The performance of these stocks since the beginning of last year gives you an illustration of why investors have been climbing into the Mag 7, as they call them. NVIDIA doing the best by far, but look at that. Meta Platforms 72% up, NVIDIA 173% up since the beginning of last year. Tesla 60% higher, Amazon 45%, Alphabet up 37% since the beginning of last year. Apple up by 26%, and that's just over a year. And even the worst of the Mag 7, Microsoft 12% better. In South Africa, I did the same exercise by having a look at the best performers on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange since January 2024. And far and away in front at the moment is Stefanuti Stocks, more than 200% gain in its share price. But three are more than 100%. That's Altron, WeBuyCars, and Nampak. And Karoo is 99.7%. We'll hear more from Karoo in just a moment. Lewis and Argent Industrial, two favorites of Piet Viljoen, by about 80% each. Southern Sun, 78%, and Mr. Price, 75%. So if you'd bought any of those shares in the past year and a bit, you'd be smiling all the way to the bank. However, here are the biggest losers since January 2024. Sasol's lost virtually half of its value. Anglo Platinum and Sibanye-Stillwater about a third of their value. BHP Billiton, AB InBev, and a 91 lost about a quarter of the value of those equities. And others in the 20% down or more club are ArcelorMittal down 22% and HCI down by 21%. Karoo this morning came out with its third quarter results. This is for the 3 months to the end of November. Solid numbers. Cartrack, which is the core business of Karoo, which is listed both here in South Africa and on NASDAQ, their growth was 15% in the number of subscribers year on year. 86,000 more people came in there. A lot of them in Southeast Asia, by the way, which is an area that they're now expanding quite rapidly into. 2.2 million subscribers now on that base, and that generated subscription revenue of more than R1 billion for the first time in any quarter, up 14% year on year. Free cash flow is strong, 187 million, up 15%. And the adjusted headline earnings per share there, up 21%. The market liked the numbers, and Karoo's share price has been edging higher over the last few hours. And then just to close off with, it came out from Momentum today. They reckon South African shares are going to be strong performers in the year ahead. They, in fact, prefer to invest in South African shares than internationals. And the reason for that is that on a long-term basis, the all-share index in South Africa is cheap, sitting at a forward price earnings multiple of just 12.6. This is in line with, when you go back over the last 50 years, this is in line with cheap levels. So that's the argument that is being put forward by one of South Africa's largest asset managers. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. My colleague Bronwyn Nielsen will be in the hot seat on Thursday, and I'll be talking to you from Switzerland on Monday. Bronwyn looking after the BizNews briefing for the whole of next week. From our exceptionally talented team at BizNews, have put together all the packages and the production here. And from yours truly, Alec Hogg, till the next time. Cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.